Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. This episode is brought to you by One Cause, creator of powerful peer-to-peer and online fundraising solutions, helping over 6,000 nonprofits make giving more social, mobile, and fun. Reinvent your supporter experience to drive deeper engagement, inspire giving, and motivate fundraising in a virtual world. To learn more about One Cause, visit them at www.onecause.com. Hi, podcast listeners. I am excited. This is the third installment of our collaboration with AFP Toronto. And so we're excited to be hosting this particular initiative with them. Carolyn, you are my co-host today. I'm just going to ask you to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about AFP Toronto and ask the rest of our guests to introduce themselves as well.
For sure. Thanks a lot, Jason. Thrilled to be here. I'm Carol Kehoe. I'm the executive director of TAFO Music Orchestra and Choir in Toronto, Ontario. And I'm here with my colleagues, whom I'm going to ask to introduce themselves, Marilyn Brown, Katie Hutchison, and Diana Reitberger. And we're all fundraisers. We're all the people who are trying to keep the arts going and sustained. So, Marilyn, why don't you start off by talking about who you are and what you're doing at the ROM?
Great. Very happy to. Thank you, Carol. And thanks, Jason. My name is Marilyn Brown. I'm the Vice President Philanthropy for the ROM Governors, the fundraising arm of the Royal Ontario Museum here in Toronto.
Thank you. Diana.
Hi. Thanks again. I am Diana Reitberger, Director of Development for the National Ballet of Canada, also here in Toronto.
And Katie.
Hi, I'm from Vibe Arts. I'm the executive director. So I do most of our fundraising as well as wear a lot of other hats for our organization.
Thanks, Katie. I think what's really quite interesting is that both the ROM and the ballet are national, very large national arts organizations. We're very lucky to have them on board today. Katie's more responsible for a smaller but very important community organization that works with children and youth in various neighborhoods. And TAFO Music is would be considered a medium-sized arts organization in terms of how we serve both the Toronto community, the national and the international streams. So I love the fact that we're going to have some really good dialogue, various outlooks and opinions, and should be a lot of fun. I think one of the things that I'm most noticing is the fact that the arts is about connection. That's what we do. We bring people together in an experience, and now we're all apart. And, you know, arts organizations, we're very responsible, and we complied with the idea of social distancing. But, you know, we all are in this situation trying to still connect. And so, Marilyn, how are you guys connecting at the ROM with your teams and with your donors?
We all followed the order. We all closed as of that, Friday the 13th, as we've joked, you know, it was Friday the 13th when those directives started to come down. And it's interesting because the museum in and of itself is a public gathering place. And then there's the work that we also do with our donors, which is very social, very face-to-face, very much connected. And so the tactic in the museum in terms of continuing to engage our public audiences has been to move to a lot of virtual content and immediately deploy that and promote that which existed, in particular for those with families and young children at home that need to occupy many hours together now doing some meaningful activities. And then with our donors, there was a period where we kind of just stopped to reassess our own new situations, all of us, in terms of moving to remote workforce, understanding what was in progress that needs to carry on, and so on. So our own setup, we are an organization of people. And then starting to reach out to our donors, primarily out of care and concerns. And so our donor base is an adult population. And so we've been trying to stay connected with them and using that time on the phone, talking to people, because that's the best way to stay connected with them. We were developing our own virtual communication strategies with donors. So that's where the focus has been.
That's fabulous. I think we've all moved into this digital space. Katie, I noticed on your website that you said you had developed 4 new online programs to serve your community. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so our primary objective is to bring arts and arts mentorship into Ontario's marginalized communities. And as soon as we heard about the measures coming, we knew that we would no longer be able to go to schools, community centers, hospitals, the places that we're used to working. So in the 2 weeks following, we developed 4 different ways to, one, keep the young artists that we employ employed, and second of all, deliver creativity through online channels. So we currently tonight, there's going to be a Friday night vibe, but Friday nights, we're giving our YouTube over to one of our young emerging artists. We are also doing live drawing classes every Wednesday night, where it's kind of for youth to adults. It's really growing and we're getting a lot of interest. We've also been able to offer them privately. So we did a 16-year-old's birthday party last week, as well as a volleyball team got together as their season ended and was able to do an art class together. We've also been delivering something called Vibe Makers, which is pre-recorded instructional videos that you could look at with your kids. And we also have DIY Vibes, which is our staff team is putting together their favorite crafts that they do with their children and recording them and putting them online. So lots of ways to get people involved in creativity, which we see is happening a lot through our social media channels. People are turning to the arts to occupy their time and find some rest and relaxation in this stressful time.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that what the arts is all about? Joy, solace, and comfort. Ballet. Diana, how about you guys?
Well, as everybody mentioned, we actually were right in the middle of our Romeo and Juliet performance season when we shut down. And we are very fortunate at the ballet. We see our donors and subscribers 6 times a year. And so we have a lot of interaction with our people at the venue. But with the abrupt shutdown, of course, we switched immediately over into just communicating with ticket holders to let them know what was happening. And nobody at that point knew how long this would take. And it also impacted our June season. But we're really fortunate because we have a fabulous communications team who immediately went into overdrive and created fantastic content, both for Instagram, Facebook, our website. And we also have the luxury of having dancers with followings. So the dancers are in high gear offering ballet classes and having people come in their home and cook with them. And we've been able to put ballet moments up from really lovely, 2-minute segments of dance to bring joy. We've moved our in-studio program, which was our adult classes online immediately. So, we were lucky that way. I think the big challenge has been the donor communication. Our donors are telling me they love the content they're seeing, but I personally don't feel we've been able to do enough in terms of reaching out to donors on various platforms. And we're going to rectify that with some town hall meetings. But mostly we've been trying to do face-to-face virtual communications with the donors, reaching out through phone and email. And people are just delighted to hear from us. So, we had built in a lot of already digital content, but it's really put everybody into overdrive about just producing segment after segment. So it's been quite a challenge for the staff, but they've done a tremendous job.
Isn't it interesting hearing you talk about it? It just reminds me, it used to be that it would be this exposure to the artists and to the experts that was considered this exclusive benefit for donors. And suddenly we've made that available, and rightfully so, made that available to a much broader audience. And it really gives our organizations an opportunity to develop more of a personality as opposed to a brand for our organizations. But one thing that I'm continually working on with my colleagues, and again, we have fantastic digital content. Some of it had existed before, and now it's our opportunity to bring it forward again. And others is just, you know, how do you manage this enthusiasm for people that do wish to engage through this channel from inside the organization? Then how do we create that special feeling that our donors would get because they could have a behind-the-scenes tour in the museum? They could have a meeting with a particular curator. They could get to meet the artists and get to know them more intimately in your respective organizations. So it's an interesting time for us. It'll be interesting to see how we all have to evolve what exclusivity means, or what inner circle means for our organizations going forward. I don't know if anyone's given any thought to that.
Marilyn, I think that's an excellent point. And certainly within TAFL Music, we've been having that very conversation, mm-hmm. mostly because of the same reasons that you all expressed. On March 13th, we pivoted and we launched TAFL Music Together, which is our online platform and is using all of the various social media avenues. And We're doing everything from showing our artists working at home to different kinds of content from various parts of the organization. Our choir members are working on a little fun trill video that's going to be launched soon. But that once we started to do this online, the questions did become very apparent from our development team. So what about the donors' exclusivity and all of the advantages that we provide to those people who are supporting us in different ways? And it did cause us to start talking about how are we going to provide a special experience for those individuals. One of the things that we're looking at is access. Limited online access to some of our key musicians for performances that would be something that the donors could participate in that wouldn't be open to the whole public. We're going to have to see how that goes, but it's hard for us to assess right now whether or not that's going to be valuable, because so many of our largest supporters, our biggest advocates, really want that face-to-face interaction with the musicians. We see that at concerts all the time. Katie, do you have this same kind of concern? I know a lot of your funding is project-based, and you rely a lot on philanthropy. And you're really community-oriented. So how does this affect you?
Yeah, when we were operation as usual, we struggled to get donors into our community programs based on just privacy and safety of the folks we work with. But individual donors and philanthropists only make up a less than 10% of our budget. It's interesting, though, this has really shown us an opportunity using our online programs as a platform to build our list of supporters. So we will have somebody take part in one of our art classes with their kid and then throw us a $10 donation as a thank you. And that was somebody who never gave before. And I feel like this is a real opportunity for a small organization like ours to build our base and grow that piece of our fundraising pie. Like you mentioned, a lot of our programs are based on project funding that we receive from corporations or the government. And given the circumstances, those projects have been put on hold. So we're really limited in the discretionary revenue that we have access to. And one of my primary goals during this time is to maintain our staff team. Our staff team is only 9 people, and they're amazing people. And so my goal is to keep them on board and make sure we have enough revenue coming in to send them a paycheck every week.
Katie, it twigs when I listen to your answer, and I would love to get the feel from Marilyn and Diana on this as larger organizations. This whole idea of maintaining the organization and trying to ensure that there is an infrastructure there to be able to support the art going forward. How do we help donors, particularly who are donating to us because they want to support our art programming, understand that now we're in a period where we just need support to keep us going as organizations? Diana and Marilyn, have you run into this in any of your discussions with donors, and what's the response?
I was just going to say from the ballet perspective that people are, of course, very concerned that our dancers and musicians are employed. And we've worked really hard as an organization to be very fiscally responsible, and we're going to actually be able to pay everybody till the end of our regular season, which would have been June 30th. I think the realities haven't quite completely sunk in. Everybody, I think, is working on various scenarios for how things will look going forward. But I find that our advocates clearly understand the demands on the company from an operational perspective, and they are showing immense support. They really want to see the ballet continue to be strong, and they are stepping up. We're not seeing any fall off in donations at this point. And so that's very heartening. And people that have made big pledges are all fulfilling their pledges. So I feel that the real test will be if this drags on into the fall, of course. But all the messaging really is about, we are here because we're about the artists, and it's our priority to do everything possible to keep them on board. So it is a very big issue, because, you know, when you have over 250 artists, it's a huge commitment. But our donors are committed to making sure they're whole. So,
Marilyn, how about you?
Museum? Yeah, at the museum, it's interesting because 60% of the operating budget comes from earned revenue and donated revenue. And so when people aren't buying tickets to come in, that's a direct impact. When people aren't buying memberships, that's a direct impact. When people aren't donating, that's a direct impact. We dramatically reduced our staffing level during this period. It was very difficult decisions taken within the museum and within the Governor's Foundation. And it's hard to project where we're going to be. And there's so much uncertainty with this whole pandemic. If we just had an end date, then we could model and understand these things, but none of us do. And our fiscal year flipped over in the middle of this as well on April 1st. So there's a great deal of uncertainty of what can we afford this year, as opposed to coming in at the end of what was a very successful fundraising year for the organization. So there's a lot of balance there. What we're trying to do, you know, we haven't had many people cancel their memberships. Certainly our major donors are honoring their pledges. We're holding back on any specific solicitations at this point. We have so many fantastic contributions that are being made to the crisis directly and to frontline organizations that are from even our top donors at the museum, which need to be celebrated. So we are celebrating every gift, every fantastic gift that's made elsewhere during this pandemic that's from one of our own. We celebrate because it's very important. At the same time, where we're seeing a shift in how we approach the fundraising and even membership is really how do you position it more as a, less of a as a transaction and more as a philanthropic gift, as an act of support for the institution. And so, you know, we have upper level memberships. And I know we have in our young patron circle, which would represent young professionals and those under 35, you know, those are the ones that are likely in precarious employment situations as well. So if you're making a monthly contribution towards this program, you might stop and think, do I continue to do this during this period? I can say probably less than three people have asked to suspend their monthly donations during this period because of economic hardship and their own planning that they have to undertake for themselves. And yet, you know, we're changing our messaging very intentionally to really reflect that if you are a member at the highest level, it's because you believe in the institution and your impact is much greater than you've just bought a discounted entry ticket to come as many times as you wish. So it's a shift. There are similarities with the performing arts in terms of the tickets that people buy, the tickets that people had, right, that they could no longer use. And I've read and you can confirm that, you know, there was a great understanding because we're all in this together. There's great understanding and a little bit more flexibility in terms of how those purchases are.
Mm-hmm. Marilyn, that is exactly as you were speaking, I was thinking, and I'm sure Diana would also support this. What we did is at Tafel Music is in exactly that. We discovered that almost 70% of people who had subscribed to the last part of our season at Tafel Music, we had to cancel three of our performances, and they turned around and donated the value of those tickets to the organization. And we were very grateful for that, and we were glad to see that kind of response. And we knew also that our single ticket purchasers, there would be a portion who would ask for a refund or the majority. And we saw that come true as well. And that that led us, of course, to start talking about the whole idea of transaction versus real engagement in the mission of the organization. One of the things at Tafel Music that we're currently doing is we have deployed a number of our internal people to call. And we are calling every subscriber on our in our database who has yet to renew to our 2021 season. And we're from that information learning those people who purchased tickets to come to the concerts more because they actually want this organization to exist as opposed to I need to see a concert. And then we're learning about the people who really do feel that they want to support, but they need to be able to see what they're going to have. I think this is one of the things that those of us who have become very reliant on that earned revenue number at Tafel Music, 60% of our revenue is earned revenue. And as soon as you move into that category, there is this whole idea of the I'm giving you something, so I should get something, which is a very different model, as we all know, from philanthropy. And so it's for us, we're starting to look at the whole idea of subscription and membership, which comes up through our philanthropy stream, whether or not those two things should be together. Because if you're a member of the organization and you're a subscriber of the organization, we should perhaps be looking at you as a strong advocate and trying to figure out how to put that together with different messaging, which is what we're looking at.
Isn't Diana, it interesting? I was just going to say, though, listening to you say that, I was like, this is a moment in time for our sector, because I know no arts organization, no cultural entity where the purchase of a ticket funds the entire organization. And so is this a galvanizing moment? Is this a time for our sector to really come out strongly and come out with the position of our sector that we are, our contribution is much greater than the 3 hours you might be visiting the museum or the 3 hours you might be sitting watching the Nutcracker and things like that. And that it's really
it's this, the societal impact of having our organizations and your ticket purchase is a contribution to that. It shocks me that all of us feel like we're waking up to this transition in messaging from transactional to philanthropic. I'm definitely one of them. And then it's like, really, it's always been philanthropic because a purchase of a ticket to participate is an act of support, right? It's a value statement. Yeah. And it's not ever enough to pay for what we're doing.
No, exactly. Exactly. Diana, you must feel the same way with the ballet.
Well, absolutely. I think we've actually been thinking this way for a while, taking a very holistic approach that if somebody is buying a ticket and, you know, is a member, you know, it can't be a communications marketing department versus a development department thing. It has to actually work together and be very unified. And so we have really done a lot more work. We're calling it customer journey, but we have really been focusing on how do we make sure that no matter what the entry point for somebody is, that they feel that they're being seen as a whole person by us, and that we are integrated in how we're communicating and how we're, you know, thanking and making sure they understand the impact of what they're doing. Because, you know, our tickets are, you know, we have tickets for $50, but a lot of our tickets are $150. And somebody making a decision to be a subscriber is a big investment. So all these people have to be seen as being very important to the support of the company, because really 80% of our money comes from donors and ticket buyers. So it's got to be treated differently. And you're right. When you have a crisis, it just makes you focus more on what is the most important thing. And that's appreciating and thanking the people that have been there for you.
Do you know, as we're talking about this, it dawns on me that part of this has been directed by the Canada Revenue Agency that won't let us tax receipt people who buy tickets. And maybe that's another message for advocacy moving forward. Katie, I know that you're in a smaller organization, and so the idea of this might be different for you. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think Diana said something that resonated with me there, and it's letting our donors know and understand their impact. I've spent almost the majority of the last 6 weeks trying to demonstrate, both through our communications and one-on-one, to our small but mighty donor base that we do have an impact even during this time. And I've heard from several foundations. We're really focused on frontline organizations right now. We're really focused on those that are working directly with those impacted by COVID-19. And the nature of our organization is that we work directly with those frontline organizations in our regular operations. So we're in hospitals, we're in seniors' homes, we're in schools and daycares. So in this time, we've actually been asked by these places to develop resources and programs for their stakeholders, which is an unfunded project that now I'm trying to share. For example, we just completed a series of videos of adapted dance movement programs for seniors who are currently relegated to their rooms at Bendale Long-Term Care Facility in Scarborough. And they get a one time a day visit from a worker who comes in with an iPad. And sometimes they can use that iPad to FaceTime their family, look at the news. But a lot of the times they don't have somebody to call, or they don't have, they don't know how to use it. So we have this very simple one touch video that then they can take part in a movement program. And the feedback has been amazing. But it's one of those things that I really have to explain, and I have to have those one-on-one conversations with folks, because when you hear about Vibe Arts, you think about delivering programs in schools, and you know schools are closed, so I'm not going to direct my money there right now. So we've had to rejig how we explain who we are in the communities that we serve, and it's been a great exercise for me and our team of how we communicate externally.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm sorry.
No,
I
okay.
who's that? Marilyn?
That's Marilyn. Yeah, I get so excited because that's one of the things that we've had to really be intentional about, because in communicating with our donors, we don't have to talk about what the impact of the pandemic is on our organization. We can just say it once and then it's understood, because again, everybody's going through something this at the same time, and we're all having similar experiences, whether you're running a business and you're thinking about these things and so on. But really, it's about what's our relevance to our donors during the pandemic. So Katie, your example is just fantastic in terms of this is how we help.
You know, I was thinking the very same thing, Marilyn, when Katie was speaking, and part of my brain was going, wow, how do I collaborate with Katie's organization to make sure that part of what we're doing at Tafel Music could actually benefit some of the audience that Katie has? I know that there is this whole idea of collaboration that we need to really start thinking about. My challenge is that I'm sometimes not sure how to go about it. Katie, what do you think in terms of cross-pollination of the different arts organizations?
Yeah, it's incredibly important to us. We truly see ourselves as a pipeline of artists that we hope will end up in the institutions and stages that you guys manage. So we really want to continue to build that pipeline and work closely with organizations that allow platforms for artists, because the folks we're working with are in their teens, early 20s, trying to make a career out of art, and we want to see them through on that. So I think collaboration is what our organization is built on with our community partners. And when we work together, we're stronger. We actually have a group of community arts organizations that have came together a few years ago, actually, to tackle mentorship of young artists. And since then, the project is now unfunded, but we still find ourselves in this time, having our weekly Zoom meetings to chat and how are we handling it? And collaboration is really what's allowed Vibe to continue being as strong as it is. And I welcome anyone who wants to work with us. We are all ears to, because we truly believe when we work together, we have a greater impact on the young artists who have a lot to give our communities.
Yeah. That one of the things that I'm also thinking about is in this whole idea of recovery. And Marilyn and Diana have both alluded to it a bit in what they've been talking about, is how are we, and the relevancy issue, how are we as arts organizations going to get together to have a similar message about our contribution and what we can do to help the community get back on its feet? We provide solace, we provide joy, we provide comfort. And do we think that there's any opportunity for donors of various organizations to actually collaborate on how to bring it back to the community as a whole? Anybody have any thoughts on that?
I think one of the things we do is call ourselves arts organizations when really we're community organizations. When I think about when you go to the ballet and everybody's, you're having your cocktail beforehand, you're meeting new people, you have to see it as a community organization as well as an arts organization. But sometimes when we call ourselves arts organizations, we miss an opportunity to actually show the impact we have on building community and development.
Yeah. I was just going to mention one of the most heartfelt things, which it's not quite related to what we're talking about, but we got a fantastic letter from a doctor who had seen Crystal Pite's Angel's Atlas. And she said, her life, we can all only imagine what it must be like for a frontline worker, especially a doctor. And she said she had that moment of deep connection to humanity by watching the dancers in this particular work that's very emotional. And she said it refreshed her. And so I agree with Katie, what she's saying. We have so much to contribute. The arts matter. And people, we have to keep reminding people that the arts matter. And I think that's something we all have to do together, because we are the ones that are the mirror. We're the ones that digest what is happening and put it into either dance or music or art visual arts. So we have to keep strong. I mean, I think every group I've talked to, everybody's either, you know, our wardrobe department are sewing masks for a hospital, you know, our production team donated all their equipment and masks and things that they use to a hospital. You know, there's a thing called hashtag Toronto Together. I mean, we have to show our strength and how important we are. And we can never take a back seat when we know things are very tough for so many people, but we cannot falter in our belief that the arts are important to everybody.
You know, I totally agree. I was on a call with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, just trying to get a sense of how, you know, they were doing and what their plans were. It was lovely to hear that so many of the things we were doing, that large, very large orchestra organization was doing as well. But the one thing that we talked about on that call was whether it was respectful to ask donors to continue to support arts when there are so many great needs right now in the community. And I was so thrilled when the vice president of philanthropy for the Chicago Symphony Orchestra said exactly what you just said, Diana. We're very important to the community, and we're absolutely necessary as part of the recovery because we are the social fabric. We are part of what brings people together. And if we don't remember that, and we don't advocate for it, we risk not having the government legislators, the bodies that need to make these important decisions over the next little while, forget perhaps that we are integral to what's going on right now. And our contribution to recovery can just be so formidable if we're given the opportunity to do it. Marilyn, how about you?
I'm just wondering if there's a way, I'm wondering out loud, if there's a way to also galvanize our donors to help us make that case. And I say that because I was thinking about our donors in relation to partnership and that discussion earlier, because our donors, I'm quite certain between our respective organizations, we share the same donors. Yeah. And in this environment, some of them may have to prioritize which they continue to support and which they choose to engage with. And certainly from that virtual engagement piece, if we're pushing out digital content to our donors and the ballet's pushing out great digital content and Tafel music and Vibe, yeah, they're being inundated with opportunities to access our art, which is fantastic that we have these resources for them, but they are being inundated. And so how do we partner for our donors as well? We're collaborating with our young patrons again, our young patrons circle, which is a very social group. So they're feeling it a lot, basically, that we've taken away this opportunity to come together. So we're collaborating with the Art Gallery of Ontario's young donor circle as well, so that jointly, perfect, because we know we have a duplicate donor base in some cases. And so I just feel very strongly that our strong supporters for the arts are shared amongst many organizations. So we can stand and say we're important and this is why. But to have our donors as our investors, as our backers and our believers and champions, how do we give them voice at the appropriate time to come forward and really reinforce that message for us?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Final thoughts, anyone, about where we're headed as organizations? Diana?
I was going to just to feed on to what was just spoken about. 100% when I talk to donors, they say we are getting a lot of material and they feel like, wow, we're getting a lot of great content and, you know, don't feel you have to do more for us. But you know, we can't make decisions for our donors. I mean, everybody sees the needs in the community, but, you know, I think it is actually more disrespectful not to ask, because we need, again, to, if we've made our case and why we're important, we can't hesitate to make the request in a respectful way that we keep getting support. And we leave it to the donor to make the decision on what at this moment they value the most. And, you know, I'm happy to say that the people I talk to say, we value the National Ballet and we are going to keep supporting you. And so I think that's what we can't forget as well. Like, let's not ask.
Yeah. Isn't that our job as fundraisers? Our job as fundraisers is to tell them people want to help and they need to know how to help, especially at a time like this. And so if we can be really clear, doesn't mean we have to be so super persistent that it becomes offensive, but if we can be really clear of how you can help now, that's our job.
Yep. Oh,
yeah. I think too, when we're talking about our existing donor base, what I've been saying a lot is we want to survive this and still be able to do our work in the future. So you gave to us once because you believed in us as an organization. And we really hope that during this time, you'll support us to weather this storm with us. And as part of that, I've sent them a weekly, like, personal email from me, exactly what we've been doing every week. And, you know, really engaging them and letting them know that their donation can go a really long way for us in this time. And that when we're through this out the other side, whatever it looks like, that we're going to be able to continue to do our work, because it's very precarious out there right now for organizations like ours. And I want to make that really clear. And it does feel a little bit desperate at times, but my communications manager said to me, it is a desperate time. So it's okay to say that out loud.
You know, as you were saying it, Katie, in my head, I went, it is a desperate time. And I don't think that any arts organization of any size is not feeling this same kind of desperation. But just to echo Marilyn and Diana, I've always believed that the respect we have for our philanthropists is that we work with them, we learn from them, and all we can do is ask, present our case, and be respectful of the decision that that comes forward. Tafel Music is very lucky to have a very loyal supporter base as well. I've been heartened and gratified by the response. In all cases, we are talking about, it's just about getting us to the other side, because we want to be here in the end to be able to bring to you what we do the best, and that is great orchestral music.
You know, as the host of this show, I get the privilege. You ladies are going to have to tell me if this is Canadian people talking or if this is just. But I get the benefit of sort of listening to your language and the words that I'm hearing. I mean, I think it was Diana who used the word delighted. I heard the word celebration. I heard the word evolve, but I heard the word evolve in a very positive way. What is it, before we kind of wrap this thing up, before we let Carol wrap this thing up for us, what is it that just makes this conversation seem so positive, upbeat, and enthusiastic? Is it that we're seeing sort of some silver lining in all this? Are we feeling better about the work that we do? Or is it that you're just Canadians and you just have a better attitude than us obnoxious Americans? I don't know.
Or misery loves company. Who knows? Yeah.
Jason, I think if you're a fundraiser, you have to be an optimist.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I agree.
And we have to be the projectors of the future.
Yep.
And we have to offer that hope. So I think that's why we have to infuse everything with that balance of the reality check versus the potential and the moving forward and the hope at the end of this.
Yep. Diana, you couldn't have said it better. That is exactly right.
Yeah, I think you all are going to enjoy. I get to do this a couple of times a week. I listen to people, but I think as you ladies get to listen to this next week, you're going to appreciate listening to your own selves, sort of exchange the positivity back and forth. And it's been very encouraging. And I think all of our listeners will appreciate that. Carol, can you kind of remind us who you are, how we can get to the AX? Because obviously there's going to be a lot of people in the Toronto area, fundraising in the Toronto area, that are going to need to know and want to understand how to get connected with this group. Yeah. What do people need to know?
So all of us are members of AFP Toronto. the Greater Toronto Chapter of the AFP. There's a website. You can go to afptoronto.org. And at that website, you're going to find many resources. We've got forums and resources under AFP Connect. We have a special global COVID-19 resource guide available. And so anybody who's listening to this who would like more information should go to afptoronto.org.
Carol and everyone else, it's been a pleasure to have you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. You're all welcome to come back anytime you've got a big idea or bold opinion about the fundraising profession that we all share. It has certainly been a pleasure for me to just sort of sit back and sip on my coffee and listen to your conversation. I hope you all have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must-read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.